Greetings out there to everybody at TFMR. Hey, it is Thursday, June 21st. It's the longest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere. What better time than to speak to my long-winded friend, Dave Kranzler? No, I'm just joking. I was trying to tie it all together, Dave. That didn't work real well. Hey, look, I just figured...
No, that's fine. I don't mind being called long-winded. If the shoe fits.
I'm the one that'll just go on and on forever if you get started. I just thought, hey, it'd be fun to bring Dave in. There's a couple of topics I want to cover that are timely. And we'll just see where the conversation takes us over the next 20 minutes or so. For those of you that don't know, Dave Kranzler is now someone I consider to be an old friend. He lives in Denver, Colorado, so he's also known as Denver Dave. He's a big weed smoker, and as you might imagine.
That's not true.
But he does have, he is a very experienced in the junk bond market. He was a high-yield debt trader for years on Wall Street. He now runs a website, Investment Research Dynamics, but he also has a subscription service of the Mining Stock Journal and the Short Sellers Journal. And that's where I want to start because Dave informs me he's about to put out an update of, what are you going to call it, Dave? Something Wicked This Way Comes or something like that?
Something Wicked Comes This Way.
Oh, pretty close. All right. Hey, tell everybody... Well, let's just start there, Dave. What comes this way, my friend?
Well, it's interesting, and I've been kind of thinking about this for a while, and then, believe it or not, one of my subscribers, who he subscribes to both journals, and he's actually in Korea, and he doesn't send me emails a lot, but when they do, they're very thought-provoking, and he sent me the printout of the yield curve, and he said, take a look at the 5 to 10, it's almost inverted. And everyone talks about 2s, 30s, 2s, 10s, 10s, 30s, and people don't really necessarily look at 5, 10s. Well, the spread between the 5s and the 10s is 13 basis points right now, and it's narrowed considerably, and it looks like it could well be on its way to inversion. And then I had been thinking about that, and I had also been thinking about the obvious intentional whacking of gold. I mean, it's just become blatant now, especially right. With these EFP PNT transactions. And I'd been thinking about this concept that, it feels like we're heading into the same type of setup, and the markets are trading very similarly to the way they were trading in mid-2008 as we headed into the what's called the Great Financial Crisis. It was really a de facto banking system collapse because Goldman Sachs was in a state of collapse before Paulson freaked out, and Bernanke and Paulson freaked out Congress, and they took $800 billion of our taxpayer money and bailed out Goldman Sachs and all the rest of the too big to fail. So, Bank was an issue.
I want to interrupt you for just a second. Hold that thought. Deutsche Bank was an issue. Again, it got to 160. In 2007, and now it's 11. But I do want to.
It's under 11 today.
I was having great fun and making a lot of money trading and shorting the what was it? SDS? Isn't that the double short S&P? I can't. It was 10 freaking years ago. And the day they came for Lehman, they came for AIG, and everything kept going down. The day they came for Goldman. And Goldman got called into question. Everybody ran off to Congress. All of a sudden, we had TARP, and the rest is history. Anyway, I just wanted to add that because that's a little bit of history perspective that people forget. Anyway, Dave, back to Deutsche Bank.
Well, I think Deutsche Bank would have collapsed in 2012 if the Bundesbank and the ECB didn't bail it out. It was on its way to collapse. And if I recall the sequence of events, they ended up issuing some sort of like preferred hybrid debt security, and they raised a few billion and it bailed it out. Well, recently they spun off their asset management business. They spun it out to the market. I think they sold something like 30%. I forget the exact percentage. And it actually was the stock was floated at a significant discount to what was expected. And to me, this just smells of selling the furniture to keep the lights on. They're obviously pulling out of the United States. And I just think that there is a viper's nest of derivatives that exist off balance sheet that have been completely covered up by the regulators, completely covered up by Deutsche Bank. And I don't think anyone really knows exactly what's there and who the counterparties are. And it would require that an army of accountants who actually understand derivatives and ISDA agreements, et cetera, you know, and some of these agreements may even be written on the back of cocktail napkins, because that would be the style of the ex-Bankers Trust guys who went over to Deutsche Bank to run the derivatives business, which is why Deutsche Bank acquired Bankers Trust. But you'd have to go through every contract to really figure out what's there. And there was that press release, kind of curious, a few weeks ago. I was talking about a big slug of billions and billions of derivatives that they have no idea what they are, who the counterparties are. And I think it's actually a lot bigger than that.
Dave, I mentioned to Greg Hunter the other day that it appears to me this week there's an active intervention going on from Swiss National Bank, maybe, to support Deutsche Bank at 11. If it starts breaking down through 11, you're talking, you know, new lows, new all-time lows into the single digits, and you potentially have this kind of run of lack of confidence, you know, that ultimately doom Bear Stearns, that ultimately doom Lehman. I mean, do you see that too?
I think it's very possible. I mean, it's that was a great interview, by the way, with Greg Hunter.
Oh,
but
thanks.
The Swiss Central Bank somehow over the last few years has seemed to be kind of, it's almost like a lapdog for the Fed and the ECB, because the Swiss National Bank has been doing all kinds of unusual things, like its massive stock portfolio and U.S. stocks, you know, in insanely overvalued stocks like Amazon. And then, you know, this what you know is possibly support for Deutsche Bank. I mean, if Deutsche Bank blows up, it's going to take everything down with it.
Right.
And so, I mean, I guess, and I think, you know, I think if the regulators and the central banks just stepped away from it and let it go, I think we would have something that, you know, the same thing that would have happened in 2008 if they didn't bail things out, only it would be 2008, probably times 5 or 10.
Right.
So, you know, and you can just kind of smell the desperation, like with the manipulation of gold and whacking, taking the price of gold down, and the propping up of the stock market, and the obvious support of Deutsche Bank here to try and keep it from collapsing. I mean, if these guys stepped away from Deutsche Bank right now, it would collapse.
Yeah.
And the stock would be at zero next week.
I would add too, Dave, notice the near constant bid for treasuries over the last couple of weeks too. I mean, that's rather, some would say counterintuitive, the way the 10-year note's gone from, what, 315 down to 290? Maybe there's a safe haven fear trade there. This something wicked that is coming, is it going to lead down the Deutsche Bank road? Is that one of the linchpins of it?
Well, you know, I actually haven't started writing my short seller's journal I release it on Sunday night. Because I'm still finishing up the mining stock journal, but I've kind of put together pieces of it, and I haven't really thought exactly, you know, how I'm going to lay it out. But I think I'm really just going to draw parallels between 2008 and now, and you know, all the trading similarities that we're seeing. I actually had Deutsche Bank in my journal as a short a few months ago, up around, I don't know, 13 or 14, the last time it bounced, and I forgot how high it bounced. And I just said, look, it's going to be a slow grind, but alive at 10 bucks, because once these things go under 10, it's over.
Yeah.
I mean, look at, they just took GE out of the Dow. How do you take GE out of the Dow? Replace it with Walgreens. I mean, give me a break. But I think, to me, that's almost telling me they basically are letting GE go.
Hey, and they're buried in derivatives, too. All the GE Capital and all that other shit that they rolled out in the mid
2000s. One of the original ones.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
yep.
Well, I encourage everybody, if you're not already a subscriber of Dave's, whether it's a short seller's journal, you know, and gosh, Dave, the information that how you keep track of the real estate market as well, I think is valuable. And if you're interested in the mining shares, again, you just got to go to Investment Research Dynamics and find it out. And if you want to learn more about, you know, what kind of see where he goes with this over the weekend, go there. David, though, in the second half here, I wanted to talk a little bit about gold because everybody, there's still this mindset out there that some way, somehow, physical supply and demand have something to do with price, you know? It cracks me up. These people have such a normalcy bias and kind of a cognitive dissonance that they cling to. You know, oh, well, clearly, you know, this must be less demand for gold worldwide is pushing the price lower. Bullshit. It doesn't have anything freaking to do with it. Anyway, I've been talking about the EFPs and the just the size and the scale. I mean, they're going to do 8,000 to 9,000 metric tons of EFPs this year. You just can't, there's just no way you can physically move that much gold around. So it's obviously just a scam of unallocated paper. You've also been talking about the PNTs, the privately negotiated transactions. They're all kind of in the same boat. Dave, ultimately, here's the question. I mean, the scale of these EFPs is up about 50% versus what the year, you know, year over year versus a run rate of the last couple of years. Does it mean anything? I mean, is the system getting more stretched? Are they getting more desperate to maintain the illusion, or is it just doesn't freaking matter? They can double it again next year because nobody freaking gives a damn.
It has to mean something, Craig. I mean, just the fact that the volume of it has ramped up so quickly, and I mean, it's starting to go parabolic, and these transactions are centered around two exchanges that we know they're supposed to be physical gold exchanges, and we know they're not.
Right.
We know they're not. And to me, you know, I think their option was just keep printing gold futures and taking, I said, you know, several years ago, I said, what's going to stop them from taking the open interest from 500,000 contracts to 1,000,000 contracts? I mean, it's the same thing as fiat currency,
right? Yeah,
they just
right.
print it as you need it.
Right.
Because no one takes delivery. And I mean, I guess that's probably the most curious thing for me and for everyone. For everyone who's looked at it, is how come these hedge funds never actually take delivery? And I almost think there's like, you know, I think the hedge funds use these contracts to index the price of gold.
Right.
And that's all they use them for.
Right.
And to take delivery, I think John Paulson might be one of them. And because he was very active in the sector in the mid-2000s. And I'm sure he was told to stay away from it and don't ask any questions why.
That's got to be it.
Well, and I've also heard the same thing about GLD. I mean, and James Turk has alluded to it. You know, he won't name names, but he's alluded to this notion that there's been some non-banks who have moved to take delivery of a large amount of gold from GLD by turning in their shares, and they were told to go pound sand. And the trustee and the operator of GLD actually has that right per the prospectus, the legalese in the prospectus. But, you know, I think you nailed it right on the head. I mean, they're out of physical and they need to keep printing derivatives to keep the gerbil on the wheel and to keep the price suppressed. I mean, it's the same thing with just general derivatives. I mean, the use of derivatives has just mushroomed since 2008, even though there were supposed to be regulations that were put into place to curtail the use. All they did was change the way these derivatives are accounted for, and it just moved more off balance sheet. And so I think we're kind of at the point where things like EFPs and PNTs and OTC derivatives in general they're printing those up the same way that the central bank in Germany did during the Weimar period was printing marks. Just keep printing more, and you have to keep printing more and more to keep the system spinning.
Yeah,
and eventually it's going to spin out of control, and we may be reaching that point.
Yeah, we're already what 1.1 billion ounces of digital silver, 1.15 billion ounces of digital silver by open interest in silver. I mean, it's actually half the open interest is half what COMEX gold is. I mean, that's astounding. It used to be maybe a quarter. You know, it'd be 130,000 silver versus 520,000 gold. Now it's half. So they're really going to town in silver. And we're seeing massive EFP use there too, Dave. I mean, look, let me ask you this. Because you followed the cot and all that stuff as long as I have, if not longer. You know, and I've always said, you know, you got to be careful with this stuff. You can use it from a historical perspective. If you know where the cot was from a historical perspective, before previous moves up or down, then maybe there's some value in projecting where the next move, you know, what direction the next move might be. But in terms of the general categories, I mean, we're seeing this. I mean, now there's just these massive positions that are built up in the non-reportable category, you know, the small specs. I mean, are we getting to the point where that's just utterly useless as well?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think part of what they've done, you know, I think they've figured out that guys like us have been able to, you know, read what's going on with the cot to tell what they're doing. And I think they've just, on top of that, they've enabled the EFTs and PNTs to continue hiding it, because those are even more opaque than the cot report.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, just for starters, you have to ask yourself, why is the cot report released on Friday for the previous Tuesday? And why isn't it released every day? I used to follow the Japanese metals exchange back in the early and mid 2000s. And I don't even know if they do the TOCOM. And I don't even know if they do it anymore, because I had heard that they were going to stop doing it. But they used to report all the positions by bank every day. And why can't the COMEX do that?
Of course,
I mean,
it's
all electronic. It's all on computers. Just a printout. They print out every day. Well, no, they want to keep it opaque. They've moved they've stopped reporting the London gold fix until after the market closes, way after the market closes. I mean, everything they're doing is to make what's going on these precious metals futures exchanges and the LBMA make it even more opaque. And you have to ask yourself, why are they doing it? And I mean, obviously we know the reason.
Dude, I completely forgot about that. That's something that I remember writing about once in March, I think, when they announced it. And so I appreciate the reminder. That is something that I'm sure most people don't even know. They now release the silver fix 12 hours after it was negotiated. I mean, they wait a half a day before. What the hell good is it? And what's gold is what?
Remove the information content from it.
Yeah. And so they do it.
I think it's the same thing.
They do it to set their benchmarks and set their options and everything else off of it. But then they don't tell anybody else what the hell it was. I mean, what a scam.
Right. And there was information. Yes. And there was information content that you could derive from the fixes, because you could watch the trading behavior just before and just after the AM fix and just before and just after the PM fix. And you could say, oh, okay. There, you know, there's a shortage of gold because it took them six iterations to balance out the buyers and the sellers, you know, but you can't do that anymore. They've removed that information content from the fix. Now the fix is completely useless, and these EFPs and PNTs are going to render the cot. Now it's going to be completely useless.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Dave, as we go forward, obviously there's a lot staring us in the face as we go into the back half of the year. I mean, you're going to, like you said, write about it this weekend. We're all watching Deutsche Bank. As I look right now, as we speak, it's under 11. I mean, it's 1089. It's looking perhaps to post another new weekly closing low. And I remind, just like I reminded Greg Hunter, I mean, the week before Bear Stearns collapse, Cramer was on there pounding the desk saying, don't take your money out of Bear Stearns. It's perfectly fine. And everybody thought it was. And then it went from, you know, 60 to 30 to 30 cents in about a week. These things can...
I remember that vividly.
These things can move pretty quickly. And, you know, when you start factoring in how all these banks are linked together and all the central banks are linked together, man, there's just... Look, they can pound the price just as easily as they can pound each other. But at the end of the day, I'm pretty comfortable looking at my shiny stack, and I'm sure you are too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, a colleague of mine who I'm going to start doing a few things with, he's you know, got a little bit of cash to invest, and he was thinking about opening up a brokerage firm in Canada. And then when he told me how much he had to start out with, it was a few thousand. I just said, look, just go buy as many rolls of Silver Eagles as you can afford and keep it under lock and key in the back of your closet, because you're going to be much better off that way and you are having your fiat currency trapped inside the custodial system, because at some point this thing's going to blow up and we don't know what it's going to look like.
Yep. That's for sure. It's good advice. My friend, due to my own time constraints, I'm going to wrap us up here, but, I have a sneaky feeling we're going to have to speak again soon. So, hold on to your phone nonstop for the next couple of weeks. Don't let it, because I might call.
Yeah, that sounds fun. And I know once football training camp starts, you're gonna call me up to give me grief about the Broncos. So anytime you want to chat, Craig, I love chatting with you,
my friend. It's and I feel the same way. This is going to be an active 6 months, and I think it's all setting us up for a 2019 that I think is going to look a lot like 2011. And we'll just see where we go from here. Dave, thank you. And again, I want everybody, go check out investmentresearchdynamics.com and look for the Short Seller's Journal. There might be some important information there. And certainly the Mining Stock Journal. If you're going to sit there and try to pick miners and find winners, trust me, you need a little help. And Dave is the best in the business. So, Dave, thank you so much. I appreciate
that, Craig.
Well, no, hey, look, it's easy to give compliments when it's true. Anyway, all the best, my friend. Let's talk again soon.
I'm blushing. Thanks, Craig. Have a great weekend.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk again soon.